The big issue continues to be the state of Michigan lockdown. And Jim Mishler, our news director, is in here with us. And we have attorney Catherine Henry, part of the Great Lakes Justice Center, on the line with us right now. Good morning, Catherine. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning.
My goodness, there's a lot going on, and it changes from hour to hour, doesn't it?
It sure does.
So, first of all, you have sent this letter out to prosecuting attorneys, city attorneys all across Michigan. I know a lot of county sheriffs also getting a copy of it. What's the gist of this letter? What are you hoping to accomplish by sending this?
To make sure that our prosecuting attorneys, our law enforcement officers across the state, are well aware of what the law says and what the Constitution requires of them. Because a lot of them are kind of going with the, I'm just following orders mentality. And that doesn't work. Even if their superior officer or the county attorney or, you know, the city attorney are telling them that they have to enforce these executive orders, the Constitution says what it says, the law says what it says, and they have a duty to uphold both of those as they are written.
So at issue is the war between the, you know, part of the legal community and the state legislature and the governor and the executive branches, kind of between these two Michigan laws from 1945 and, 1976. Is that kind of the gist of this? You're kind of trying to clarify that from your legal point of view?
Absolutely. And it's not just a legal opinion in terms of I just kind of gave them a summary. I literally pulled the text of the statutes, pulled it all together, and explained to them that, you know, while it's true that we have one of these statutes, the 1945 Act, that doesn't have a specific time frame in mind that the governor has to abide by when exercising these emergency powers, the 1976 statute does have a specific timeline. And the it's very clear our laws and we have Supreme Court precedent on point that tells us when you have two laws that are on the same topic, you have to read both of them together. You can't just cherry pick and follow one and not the other. Just like with driving laws, we have a law about wearing seatbelts. We have a law about going the speed limit. They're in two different statutes, but we have to follow both of them. You have to read all the laws on driving a car at the same time when you're driving the car. So the same thing follows here. It's not like, you know, some people are suggesting that the 1945 Act allows the governor, you know, to be able to issue, reissue new states of emergency in perpetuity, or that it specifically allows her to go beyond the 28 days. It's not that we have two statutes that are in conflict here. We just have a statute that gives that specific 28-day time limit, and then the older statute doesn't talk about that. But people also need to think about the context that these laws are written in. The 1945 Act is specifically within the Emergency Powers of Governor Act, because it's within the part of our statutes that talk about what all of her powers are as governor. It doesn't go into specifics about how the legislature, what their duties are in relation to what her duties and obligations are. So the 1976 statute, it's much later in our statutory scheme in terms of the numbering. It's chapter 30 versus chapter 10. And it goes into a lot more specifics because it talks about not only what the governor's duties would be, it talks about all the different players we have in the system. There's information on what individual people have to do and what frontline workers are allowed to do and what role the legislature has and what role the governor has. So it's more specific, but it's obvious that it has to be read together. So the whole point is we have different statutes on point, and we have to follow all of them. We don't get to cherry pick which ones are there. Besides which, one of the main underlying points here is that our state constitution, Article 3, Section 2, requires that we have a true separation of powers. And it specifically says we cannot have someone, say, in the governor's seat, exercise power that's properly belonging to somebody who's in, say, the legislative branch. So when you have a governor who's going to issue executive orders that replace or try to act like they are law, and she wants law enforcement to enforce those upon the people, but then the legislature is being kept silent and pushed down in this whole situation, that's clearly a violation of that Article 3, Section 2 prohibition against her doing that. So those are the main topics that I talk about in here. Not to mention that we have, anytime you have a government officer doing anything, they have to act under authority specifically given to them by the law or by the Constitution. And if they act beyond that, they're acting beyond the scope of their governmental authority. And if they are acting so far beyond that or so egregious in that, then they are also committing malicious prosecution and abuse of process, which means they can be held civilly and criminally liable for doing so. But I also remind our officers and our law enforcement, our prosecutors and city attorneys, that's what they're facing if they're going to decide to enforce these illegal executive orders.
So in a short response then, you're saying the state legislature is 100% spot on for filing a lawsuit against the governor because of what she's been doing.
Yes. I just don't think that it's necessary. I think they could have done that, and that's totally fine. But it's also important to realize that we have our rights as they are. We don't get our rights from a court, from right. a judge, or even from a legislature. So people don't have to wait to open their stores or to attend birthday parties or whatnot for a court to say, yep, you can go ahead and do that now. No, the law is very clear what it says, and the Constitution is very clear what it says. So we can go ahead and exercise those rights right now and let the legislature and the governor sort things out in court, but we have our rights.
It sounds to me, Catherine, like if the attorney general and the governor were able to just stand on the 1945 law, any Michigan governor could just take over at any time indefinitely, and we wouldn't even need a legislature, or why have one? They wouldn't have any power. Am I right?
Absolutely, and that is why Lee Chatfield was talking about we have a separation of powers, and by her doing this, she's essentially erasing the whole purpose of having a legislature. So that's why it clearly violates that Article 3, Section 2 provision of our state constitution.
I heard you say something about liability. If the courts ruled a certain way, would, like, say, a barber shop that's been shut down have the right to sue the governor of the state of Michigan to get the money they've lost?
I believe there's absolutely that. Those two things I mentioned, abuse of process and malicious prosecution, those are just two of the things that people could sue for against any of these government officials that think they're going to enforce these illegal executive orders. Well, there's a lot of other things that come into play. We have some federal provisions like 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. We have a variety of other aspects from federal statutes, as well as, like I mentioned, those specific claims under state law. But yeah, the governor, the attorney general, if it's a local, city attorney that's doing the prosecution and, a local police officer, they're all on the hook if they're going to be exercising power that's beyond what their legal authority actually is. So what the legislature asked for in their lawsuit was a motion for immediate declaratory judgment. So if they lost today, it wouldn't mean that the entire case was decided against them. The most likely scenario, if they were to lose, is basically the judge saying, well, I want to let this case flesh out completely. I want to make sure we have all the pleadings. I want to make sure I have all the information in front of me before I go ahead and say that the law requires me to immediately grant a judgment in your favor. Now, I actually think, because of reasons that I just stated a moment ago here, that the law actually would allow the court and require the court to issue that immediate declaratory judgment. But sometimes judges think they're erring on the side of caution by allowing a case to completely go through the whole long, full process and not issuing that immediate judgment, even though certain circumstances it would be required in.
Catherine Henry is a lawyer. One of the things she does is works with Great Lakes Justice Center.
We have, I believe, as many as 16 other lawsuits currently pending in courts across the state against the governor for these very situations. And each of those are taking their own different path and their own different course. Some of them were filed before April 30th, so they're just challenging the entire constitutionality of a certain provision that was being enforced. Some of them were filed after April 30th, such as the legislature's lawsuits, because the entire exercise of emergency powers after April 30th is illegal. And so each one of those lawsuits is kind of taking its own avenue. It's no matter if somebody's waiting for one of those to be done, like the lawsuit with the legislature and the governor directly, even if the court issued an emergency declaratory or immediate declaratory judgment today, most likely that means the governor would appeal. And so people shouldn't be holding their breath waiting for the court to sort this out, because it's not going to be a quick process. And just because one person wins in a lawsuit, let's say one person wins against the governor, and that is totally, it's gone, you know, it's gone through all the levels of court appeals, and there's no more way for the governor to appeal it. We still have all those other lawsuits that are still pending. The other ones just don't just go away. So people need to realize they can exercise their rights now. And if they're choosing to wait for the court to tell the governor she's got to stop, that's going to take some time.
You know, we talk about all these issues of due process of law, constitutional rights, First Amendment rights, and a lot of people have concerns that those are, you know, being set aside. Where's the ACLU in all of this? Do they still exist as an organization?
I honestly don't know. I have wondered why we don't have not just, you know, different organizations like that, ones we're used to seeing in different cases just like this. But where are all the other attorneys? I know of a couple of attorneys that have, you know, written some letters similar to what I've written. But why am I the only attorney that will stand on the steps of the Capitol telling the people what the law says, you know, what the Constitution says? I don't know how to answer you on that, because I'm just shocked that all of us as attorneys, every single attorney, whether you're a defense attorney, whether you draft wills, if you're licensed to practice law in here in Michigan, you took an oath to uphold the state and U.S. Constitution, and you're supposed to be supporting the laws as they are written on the books. So why none of these organizations or individual attorneys are really stepping forward to help educate the people and to hold these government officials accountable, I'm not sure. That's a great question.
Yes, it is. One that's been on my mind. I mean, I haven't even heard the mention of the American Civil Liberties Union at all through all of this.
Mm-mm.
And you would think they would be right alongside of you fighting for the constitutional rights of people, but I guess maybe they must be politically motivated in some way.
I honestly think that's what the situation is, yes.
Yeah. So what about county sheriffs in all of this? I mean, we hear about some county sheriffs who say, you know, I'm not comfortable with enforcing these things, and other sheriffs which are like kind of hiding in the closet because they don't want to have to confront the issue. But county sheriffs really should be enforcing the Constitution above everything else, right?
Absolutely. And actually, the interesting thing that you mentioned, that I don't have the language verbatim in front of me right now, but a moment ago when I mentioned our oath of office, every single public official, so it could be down to, you know, like a school board, you know, office, it could be a city manager, it could be a township, you know, supervisor, that kind of thing, all the way up, every level of government, and our law enforcement officers. Their oath of office specifically requires them to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, and then essentially directs them to faithfully discharge the duties of office, which implies that enforcement of the statutes we have on the books. But it actually doesn't spell out that they have to uphold the laws of the state of Michigan, because the laws sometimes are unconstitutional on their face. So the whole oath of office is focused on, we have a constitution, We have a state constitution, we have a federal constitution, and your duty is to uphold those above all else.
If we circle back to where we started, Catherine, they have an oath to uphold the whole Constitution, not just that 1945 part.
Well, the 1945 part isn't even a provision of our Constitution. That's a statute that was enacted by the legislature and signed by the governor back then.
Uh-huh.
So even if there were parts of that that were unconstitutional, they still have the duty to follow the Constitution. There are many that are arguing, and I'm not sure that it's wrong to say, that exercising emergency powers at all in a way that can rewrite laws, that would be an unconstitutional exercise by the governor in violation of that separation of powers clause, the Article 3, Section 2 I mentioned earlier. And I didn't mention Article 4, Section 4 of our U.S. Constitution also guarantees for every state that Republican form of government, that the power belongs to the people, and we merely elect others to go in our place and to act on our behalf to, you know, keep everything going, but never are they allowed or given the right to reduce the rights that we have under the Constitution or to exercise more authority than the laws or the Constitution allows.
Right. The executive branch does not make law.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck in your fight. We appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.